I'm Indy Todd. Welcome to The Point. It's hurricane season as Texas and areas along the Gulf Coast start cleanup from Hurricane Harvey. Florida braces itself for the approach of Hurricane Irma, now a Category 5 storm. While hurricane force winds are destructive, flooding from the combination of heavy rainfall and coastal surges can cause serious damage to dwellings and infrastructure. Today we're talking about the National Flood Insurance Program as it comes up for reauthorization by Congress. What are some of the potential changes and how might they impact us regionally? Also, we'll talk about how towns on the Cape and Islands can earn reductions in flood insurance premiums for policyholders through flood plan management practices. Joining us is Joe Rossi. He's a flood insurance specialist for Rogers & Gray Insurance Company. He sits on the National Flood Determination Association's Legislative Committee, and he's the chair of the Massachusetts Coastal Coalition. Welcome, Joe. Good to see you.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us is Shannon Jarboe. She's the Community Rating System and Flood Plan Coordinator for Barnstable County through the Cape Cod Cooperative Extension and Woods Hole Sea Grant Program. Welcome to you as well, Shannon.
Thank you.
Joe, let's start with an explanation of the National Flood Insurance Program. What is it and how does it work and who's eligible?
Sure. So basically, the National Flood Insurance Program was established in 1968 because of several large storms at that time and also the lack of private insurance involvement in insuring against the peril of flood. So the program was formed. What's interesting is that the program really has four parts. The insurance piece is the most customer-facing part of the program. There's also floodplain management, the management of our floodplains, flood mapping, or the mapping that we are all familiar with in some level in this area, and also mitigation grants. So basically, if your community, it is a voluntary program, so communities have to adopt those floodplain management guidelines and maps in order to be part of the program for federal flood insurance to be available in that community. 22,000 out of about 24,000 communities nationwide are part of the National Flood Insurance Program. So if your community is part of the program, you are eligible for federally backed flood insurance. So there's certainly private flood insurance options that are starting to become available within the last 5 years or so, but the federally backed option, pending legislative changes, which I know we'll be talking about today, is still the best and most trusted option.
All right, Shannon, flood insurance is different from homeowners insurance. So explain why it's important to know the difference in what's covered and what's not covered in each.
Yeah, it's a really good point. That's a common misunderstanding that flood insurance is included in homeowners insurance, and it's really important to know that it is not. You do have to purchase a separate flood insurance policy, and there is some confusion about whether or not folks are eligible for flood insurance. As Joe mentioned, everyone is eligible for flood insurance through the National Flood Insurance Program, whether you're in a floodplain or not. Within any community that participates in the NFIP, you can get a policy. Where it gets confusing is a lot of homeowners insurance companies will not offer homeowners insurance near the coast. And that's for a few different reasons, but one of the major reasons is because after Hurricane Katrina, there were some big lawsuits. When there was just a slab left on the ground, they couldn't determine whether or not it was wind or water that caused that damage. And so the private homeowners insurance companies who will cover wind said, we don't want to cover that. And the flood insurance program said, well, we don't want to cover that. So because of that challenge, some homeowners insurance companies won't go very close to the coast. And that causes some confusion about whether or not flood is included in that.
Right. So how are rates for the National Flood Insurance Program set? And do people in different parts of the country pay different rates?
Well, it's congressionally mandated. The rates are set by the federal government, and they're supposed to be the same for everyone. And I say supposed to because if you go to the National Flood Program to get a quote for a policy, there is one rate for each building. It's just if the agent that you're working with gets you the right rate or not, that's a whole nother question. But there should only be one lowest rate per building, and that is the same nationwide. So the rates, a lot of people have asked me, what's going to happen with all these hurricanes? Are we going to see a huge spike in flood insurance rates? The answer is no, because it would take a congressional mandate or change in order to see those spikes in rates. So from a federal perspective, we won't see any direct impacts rating-wise or insurance-wise from the federal program.
That's different than the homeowner's insurance. That wind deductible keeps going up, up, up.
Yes, indeed. And that you mentioned, is it different between states? It's not different between states. It's just based on the flood zone that you're in and the elevation of your first floor. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be the same no matter where you are. So it does not matter what your state is. The only thing that really matters is your actual flood zone.
I'm just going back to something you said a minute ago, which I'm sure people are going, wait, I don't have flood insurance in my homeowner's policy. I think a lot of people, especially in this area, believe that they do.
Exactly. And it's so important to get a flood insurance policy. In the past 2 months, we've seen two major rain events that have caused flooding all over the place. It's not only a coastal issue. And if you're not in a floodplain, then you can get what's called a preferred risk policy that's relatively cheap. If you've never had any flood damage before, you can get a policy for a few hundred dollars.
It's $500 at most for the for the full policy.
Well, and I would say this is floods. We're talking from nature. We're not talking about a pipe bursting in your house. Your homeowner's insurance will cover that kind
right.
of a flood.
It's any flood that's 2 acres.
Two acres or more, two parcels or more of temporarily dry land that is, or that normally dry land that is temporarily inundated by water.
Mm. But even a pool bursting can be covered by flood insurance if it affects
if it meets two
properties.
Parcels, that's right. Exactly it. And that has happened wow. before. That has
but
happened
typically
before.
It's what's known as an act of God.
Right. So in 2014, there were changes to the flood maps for our region that affected an additional 8,000 dwellings in our region. So Shannon, Barnstable County responded with regionalizing floodplain management, a first of its kind approach that recently won an award, Excellence in Floodplain Management. So tell us about that.
Yes. Yeah, so that was the creation of my position back in 2015. That was in response to the new flood maps that did add those actually over 8,000 structures to the floodplain, which means if any of those structures had federally backed mortgages, they were now required to purchase flood insurance. And at the same time, flood insurance rates were increasing. Congress increased the rates pretty drastically the last time the program was reauthorized in 2012. And then there was another round of changes in 2014. And Barnstable County was particularly affected because Congress tried to limit the impact on primary homeowners, but secondary homeowners were still very affected, and we have so many secondary homeowners here on the Cape. So because of those two things, the county said, okay, what can we do to help alleviate these increasing costs, because it is pushing some people out of their homes, even their primary homes. So this position was created with some seed funding from Woods Hole Sea Grant, and the towns themselves still do their floodplain management. Anything regulatory goes through the towns, but I'm available as technical assistance. And then I also help the towns get into and then maintain their participation in the community rating system, which can help to save money on flood insurance for all of those folks that have flood insurance policies and are in the floodplain.
What about the change in those maps? I'm sure you both are familiar with that. There were a lot of people who were really upset that who were not in the floodplain now are. And the people argued, hey, this property has been here 100 years and it's never been flooded. So what was the explanation to those people who felt like they didn't deserve to be in the floodplain?
Well, I'll tell you this. The people in Houston that were forced to have flood insurance are really thankful that they did at the end of the day. And I think, you know, what we're really talking about is that we don't have a poorly functioning national flood insurance program. We have a problem as a country where we just don't purchase flood insurance. Only 12% of American households have flood insurance nationwide. So, you know, to the people that, and I know, Shannon, you can speak on the direct impacts here on the Cape, but I would say in general to those that, you know, have issues, of course, cost is always a concern. There are provisions within the program for those that are newly mapped to get lower rates initially. So there are ways to get, you know, lower premiums and policies, elevation certificates. In general, though, those that have flood insurance will always recover better after a disaster than those that don't. So, you know, that's to a lot of the people that had issues with being mapped into the flood zone, regardless of what the issue may have been. My general comment is, let's take a look at your policy. Let's see how we can reduce the premium, but you still should have flood insurance. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And the new maps were created as part of a congressional mandate several years ago to update all of the East Coast. So the entire East Coast is going through map updates right now, and they're just using better models. So in theory, they're better. There's better data behind those maps, and they're more accurate. And just because a structure hasn't flooded in 30 or 100 years, I hear that all the time, mm-hmm. and you've just been really lucky.
Yeah, I was going to say with sea level rise and all the things that are happening weather wise, that may not hold for the next 100 years. You mentioned the community rating system. Tell us about Barnstable County's approach. Is it different than how other communities manage floodplains?
Sure. Yes. So the community rating system is a program within the National Flood Insurance Program, and towns, any entity with land use jurisdiction, can opt to participate in the CRS by taking on certain practices that help improve floodplain management and help keep people safe from flooding. And in exchange for those actions, their residents or anyone with a flood insurance policy in their town gets a discount on that flood insurance. And what Barnstable County is doing that's different, the reason that a lot of towns, especially in New England, that don't participate in the program, it's because it's a resource-intensive program. It takes a lot of resources, and it's a federal program. There's a lot of
paperwork.
Bureaucratic red tape in there. Exactly. So what the county has done is regionalized the management of that program. So I help the towns with all of that back-end paperwork and do as much as I can for the towns. There are still some things that the towns have to do themselves, but I take on about 75% of the work so that the towns have to do a relatively minimal lift compared to what it would be. So we've doubled the amount of towns that are in the program. Started with 4 when I got here. Now we have 8, and we're working on getting
several more. These are 8 on the Cape that you're talking about.
Correct.
In Barnstable County.
Yep,
what about the islands? Do we know? Are the islands part of that?
The islands do not participate in the CRS. None of the towns participate in the CRS, but there is some interest out on the islands.
So what towns in our regions then have implemented those changes as part of the community rating system?
Sure. We have Provincetown, Orleans, Harwich, Chatham, Eastham, Mashpee, Brewster, and I am forgetting one.
It'll come to you.
It will come to me. There are 8, though. And most have a 10% discount. Provincetown, Orleans.
10%? That's a good discount.
It is, yeah. Provincetown, Orleans, and Brewster have a 5% discount. All the others have a 10% discount. And the 5%, we're hoping to get Orleans. I'm working on every 5 years, the towns go through an update. I'm working on their update with them right now. So hopefully we can get them up to a 10% discount. And same with Provincetown, the next time they go through it, hopefully we can improve that.
866-999-4626 is our number if you'd like to join our conversation or you have a question. 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll talk more after a break. You're listening to The Point. We are talking about the National Flood Insurance Program with Joe Rossi, flood insurance specialist for Rogers & Gray Insurance Company. He sits on the National Flood Determination Association's Legislative Committee, and he's chair of the Massachusetts Coastal Coalition. Also with us is Shannon Jarboe. She's the Community Rating System and Flood Plan Coordinator for Barnstable County through the Cape Cod Cooperative Extension and Woods Hole Sea Grant. 866-999-4626 is our number to join the conversation. 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. Wellfleet, you thought
Wellfleet.
Of it.
See, that Wellfleet's number
the other,
8.
is the other town. I wanted to just mention for a minute here, before we went on the air, we were talking about hurricanes. And Joe, you mentioned that really most of this damage that we see is from nor'easters and rain events. So we're not even talking hurricanes.
Yeah,
right?
I would say our area is a little unique. And that's one of the things I try to preach when I go out on and to a lot of these national events that I attend and speak at is, you know, our northeast-facing shores will certainly see damage from a hurricane, but not as nearly as bad as when we see our nor'easters on those shores. You know, there's a reason they call them nor'easters, because they're coming in from the northeast, the winds are, and truly batter our northeast-facing coasts. You know, we constantly see some of the more storm-prone and damaged areas are those areas like Scituate, Plum Island, Marshfield, and you go down into the Cape's north-facing shores as well. And a lot of that is, you know, due to the fact that these storms back in, much like a hurricane approaches from the south to the north, these nor'easters almost come in from the northeast, and their winds accelerate the height and force of the waves that cause a lot of the wave damage. And they're actually, what's interesting about the nor'easters is that their damage is relatively contained to the coast, mm-hmm. where a hurricane will see obviously widespread damage to all areas. Our nor'easters are relatively coastally focused. And Shannon, you can certainly talk about rain events. Yeah. We were talking too about how the two rain events you had mentioned on the Cape. I'd been talking about this over the summer. Meet the 1% criteria. Any 7 inches of rain in a 24-hour period is the same as FEMA's 1% storm. Mm. So, you know, you can talk a little bit more about what you guys saw down here during those events.
Yeah, so we saw lots of flooding that I certainly didn't expect to see, especially on the Cape where we have such sandy soils and water percolates so easily. But with so much rain in such a short time, we saw flooding that I didn't realize could really happen here. So that really opened my eyes to understanding that a lot of these rain events are going to start being more of a problem for us. And that is another reason to get flood insurance, that even mm-hmm. if you're far away from the coast, if you see any sort of problems from rain, that flood insurance should cover that.
And we've mentioned this many times when we do the gardening segment on the program. We used to have those nice little soft little rain. Now it's, you know, it comes down much harder than it used to. And we have much more of those where the ground isn't be able to soak it up that fast. It runs off, and
exactly.
that's where we run into some problems. All right, Kay is giving us a call from Dennisport. Good morning, Kay.
Good morning. Want to thank you for having this conversation. Flood insurance is very important, but I just wanted to add something that while the flood insurance is truly least expensive compared to what other insurances are, it is my experience that whether it's $200, $300, $400, or whatever, it has to be paid all at once. You can't put this over a payment system, or at least I have not been able to, and anybody else I've talked to has not been able to put it over a 5 mm-hmm. to 6 to 10-month payment. And even though that insurance is relatively inexpensive, that's a big chunk out of your monthly budget.
Yeah.
That's what's so hard for people.
Yeah. Okay. That's a good. Let's ask about that. So is that your experience?
That is true. Flood insurance is mandated to be paid all up front. There are two pieces I will say that are either happening now as a relief effort, I call them, or will be happening. The first is that as of January 1st of 2016, any loan that is new, extended, made, or increased must be escrowed for flood. So while you do owe it all up front for the first year, every subsequent year is escrowed if you have a loan, if you have a mortgage. Mm-hmm. Now, the other piece that the legislation that was actually passed in 2014 and FEMA still hasn't implemented it, and all the legislative pieces that are proposed this time around ask FEMA to now expedite this process, is to allow monthly payments of flood insurance. There's a lot of talk in the industry about how that would be done. We actually have come to a conclusion that premium finance companies would be instrumental in doing that, because from a reporting standpoint, federal government can't take monthly payments. We have to have it all up front. Mm-hmm. So we want to partner with premium finance companies to allow that monthly payment. So this is something that I'm hoping, if you do have flood insurance due all up front due to either not having a loan or you don't want to take that first year's all up front like you still have to, even if you do have a mortgage, that will have relief over the next year mm-hmm. or so.
Okay, thanks for that question. That was an excellent question. I didn't realize that. And that for some people on a fixed income, that can, you know, that can be a big chunk of money. All right, we have this is from Barbara. Great discussion, so timely. With any insurance, the devil is in the details. How well claims are handled and how good the coverage actually is when a claim has to be made. How does the federal program's track record, how is the track record on this compare with private flood insurance?
Well, I'll tell you that, you know, private flood insurance and any insurance uses a series of adjusters, and these adjusters go out and they assess claims. They assess damage, and they make determinations based on what a policy will and won't cover. There were a lot of concerns, as we may have heard in the 2012 Sandy storm in New York and New Jersey, about fraudulent claims or things not being processed correctly, claims that are still working on being paid out 5 years later. All are relevant whether because they happen or because of the perception that it gives the National Flood Insurance Program. And the administrator of the National Flood Insurance Program and his deputy administrator, the administrator is Rory Wright and deputy administrator is David Marstead, they both recognized this and implemented a series of changes to the claims process. I'm actually recently appointed to the claims task force and experience task force, and what we're tasked to do is truly improve the claims experience because of how poor that in 2012 that claims experience was. So FEMA has actually set up an entirely new claims review process. And to answer that question, what we're seeing now in Houston is that in the last week and a half, already $1 billion has gone to the victims that had flood insurance in that area. So the expedited payment process that they implemented as part of that revision of the claims process is working well. Mm-hmm. So that's how the claims are handled. And Shane, I don't know if you want to add to that at all.
Yeah, a couple other things. One thing is that the flood insurance program is typically operated through private companies. So it's still those private companies that are actually going out and their adjusters are going out and assessing those claims. So the private companies are still the ones on the ground operating the program. Mm. And then another thing with private flood insurance, the question was comparing private flood insurance. Private flood insurance is extremely difficult to come by right now. Just in the last round of reforms, did Congress even allow private flood insurance to meet some of the requirements of if you have a federally backed mortgage in a floodplain, you have to have flood insurance. So you can't really compare with private flood insurance yet because private flood insurance is not really a robust market yet.
Right. So the National Flood Insurance Program is up for reauthorization by Congress this month. What are some of the changes we're seeing proposed, and how might those changes impact us here in Massachusetts?
Sure. So, you know, sitting on the NFDA's legislative committee, we actually have a weekly call to talk about some of these issues, and we'll have a call this afternoon as an update. And I could go through here and talk about, I've got 5 pages of each bill that's proposed and our comments on it. But right now, after the hurricanes that are going on, we really need to focus on one big piece, and that is to get what's known as a clean reauthorization. The program expires September 30th, and there are about 10 legislative days in Congress left to reauthorize or extend the program until that program expires. When that program expires, no new flood insurance policies can be written. No current policies can be renewed, and no claims can be paid. That wouldn't be a good situation to find us in right now with everything going on down in Houston. What we're really pushing for is for 1 year extension in the program to allow without any amendments that might hold up the extension or anything. Because what's going to happen is if we don't get it's going to take us at least 6 months to process the bulk of what's going on down in Harvey and whatever happens this coming week with Irma. So, you know, we really will need that 1 year extension. And plus, you know, FEMA has said that they will come out with an affordability study that they were mandated to complete years ago, finally this month. Mm-hmm. And so we need time to digest that affordability study. We need time to be able to look at what's going on with all the hurricanes to be able to reassess the program. So we're pushing for a 1 year clean extension. Unfortunately, the House Financial Services Committee, who is controlling this reauthorization in the House, has said that they will not accept anything more than a 3-month extension and attaching some additions to that. We see that as creating a nightmare scenario because, A, we'll have to debate those changes that are being proposed, and, B, that brings us into the holiday season where Congress is more than likely not to act if a lapse was imminent.
Well, it seems Congress is having a hard time passing any legislation. And then we're also in the midst, as you said, dealing with flooding from major hurricanes. So what are your thoughts then as to how politics and the current weather-related disasters are going to play in this role of passing what you're looking for? Are you optimistic that that can happen?
I'm optimistic that we will get an extension. I'm not so optimistic we'll get the 1 year that we've all been looking for. And I say we as the industry. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm networked into a bunch of different places, as Shannon is, into the flood insurance industries. And you look at the, whether it be claims or the insurance or the vendors of those insurance companies or FEMA, and they, and this is the one time where they're all coming together and saying, we need a 1 year extension of this program with no attachments. Right. So, you know, we can get into some of the more, you know, specific proposals, but I really think at this point, none of them mean anything because we're not going to get any of this. I guess the biggest part, and Shannon, feel free to jump in here because I'll go on this because we're right in the middle of the discussion. The only bill that the House Financial Services Committee wants to attach is something known as the Market Parity Act. You know, Shannon very, very well explained that the private flood insurance markets, while they do exist and there are over 200 different private flood insurance options right now nationwide, they are not being, contrary to what a private insurance executive may tell you, they are not as widely adopted as they probably, as our nation either would like to see or that private flood insurance should be involved to. Mostly that's because the regulatory agencies, remember, where this all revolves around something called the mandatory purchase requirement. That requirement is you have a loan, you've got to purchase flood insurance if you're in a flood zone. That is all regulated at the NFDA. We're kind of the outside caretakers of that requirement. But inside the federal government, the caretakers of that requirement are the regulatory lending agencies, such as the OCC and the FDIC and those agencies. They have not issued their final requirements for what can and can't be accepted as a private flood insurance policy. So until that happens, private flood insurance, you know, will not be as widely accepted. The Parity Act actually says that they, A, adopt that regulatory language to clear the way for private flood insurance, and B, allows you to go from the federal program to private policies and then back without losing any grandfathering or beneficial rating.
That's a
Currently, that can't happen. So that one bill is the big piece that the House would like to pass tomorrow if they could, because their goal is to try to get out of federal flood insurance as fast as possible. Something I'm not exactly for, but that's another discussion. So that being said, that is the big kind of, that's what everything will be linchpinned
on. That's the sticking point, yeah.
That is the sticking point.
And there is a big challenge with private flood insurance. There's a reason that the NFIP was created in the first place. It was because the private market wanted no part of flood insurance because typically—
Too risky. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. It's that's how insurance works. You have to spread the risk, and the risk with flood insurance is all concentrated primarily in areas that it's likely to flood, and those are the folks that buy flood insurance. So the private market has got to do some figuring, too, to figure out how to make it be a viable product for them.
Some people argue that we shouldn't be rebuilding in the floodplain. There are regions in New York and New Jersey who've experienced just after Sandy. Can you explain how not rebuilding these communities, what's the impact of that? I mean, why do we rebuild in these places that flood? Like I'm thinking Situate, Plum Island, you know, all these places. What are your thoughts on that?
So we rebuilt because we want things to be back to normal. We want our communities to be recognizable. We want to be able to bring in tourism. We want things to get back to normal. It's whenever we have any major disaster, it's we're going to be strong, we're going to get through this, and we're going to build back bigger and stronger, but in the same place. And that is, there is a lot behind that. There's a lot of community character. There's a lot of tourism dollars that come in from that. So saying we cannot rebuild in the exact same place is a very difficult political argument to make.
I would say that the National Flood Insurance Program has actually done a really good job at this, although we haven't, we're at the point now where reforms are certainly needed. And I've been going around kind of preaching the last couple of weeks after seeing several articles that say we should sunset the NFIP, we don't need the NFIP, and blah, 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 blah. You know, my thought is that the NFIP is the greatest land use tool in our country. It has truly saved us as a nation billions and billion of dollars, either through insurance payouts that the taxpayer hasn't had to pay in, or land uses in which disasters were avoided. You know, the house that gets wiped out by a coastal storm gets the front page of every news story in the country. What doesn't get the front page is the house next door that is perfectly fine and livable the next day. That happens so much more often around this country that doesn't get covered, that we don't see the billions of dollars in saved dollars because of the National Flood Insurance Program. Like I mentioned earlier, flood insurance is the only and best way to get back into your building after a storm. If you wait for disaster assistance, like all those people, 80% of them in some cases in the Houston area, they are only eligible for $32,000 of disaster assistance funds. That will not get you back into a home.
All right, Whitney has a question here. He says, please comment on the issue of National Flood Insurance subsidizing foolish redevelopment in vulnerable areas due to artificially low rates, which are covered by taxpayers.
Well, the first thing I would say to that is that up until Katrina, there was not one penny of taxpayer dollars that went into the National Flood Insurance Program. Even still, had that debt been forgiven after Katrina, it sounds like a foolish thing. But if that debt had been forgiven after Katrina, there still would not be any taxpayer dollars that go into the program. We're paying so much debt in the program because Katrina, we're servicing our debt that was built on from servicing other debt. So we've just built debt onto debt onto debt. So that is never going to go away unless we forgive the debt, which, again, sounds like a crazy idea. But what we want is a truly functioning insurance program. The National Flood Insurance Program was the best functioning flood insurance federal program up until Katrina in 2005. So from that perspective, you know, what I would say is the program does subsidize through what's called cross subsidies. Somebody paying a full risk rate is subsidizing somebody paying a much lower, artificially low rate. You know, taxpayers don't subsidize those structures. It's actually policyholders do within the National Flood Insurance Program. So those artificially low rates, that is truly a problem. And that is a great point being made. And I think this reauthorization, we have a chance to get that right. What happens nationally is about 20% of buildings were built before there were any standards in effect at all. Those are called pre-firms. That's nationally 20%. In New England, it's like 55%. Mm. And on Cape Cod, it's in some cases 80%. So we have a problem up here with those pre-firm rates. Those are also some of the buildings that receive the worst damage in a storm because they were built to no standards. There's no standard that building had to be built to. And the solution is to elevate those buildings or, as has been mentioned, to actually remove them. So what I think Shannon would agree with me here is that this reauthorization, we have a chance, you know, to allow some federal funding to come in to start to fix that problem by saying to homeowners, your rates will either continue to go up or here is mitigating dollars to elevate that structure to reduce your risk and lower your premium. And if you decide not to do that, then your premiums are going to continue to go up.
And I think something that's important to point out is the reason that that was put in place in the first place, and it was to get the National Flood Insurance Program created. There was no way
exactly
to politically pass that without giving the folks that were already built a break. But now, of course, as Joe said, we are seeing some major repercussions from that, and Congress did try to eliminate that with the last reauthorization in 2012, and we had such an outcry from people. But I think another thing to keep in mind is that flood insurance is not just for the wealthy. It's not just for the folks that are waterfront that have those big, beautiful homes. It only covers up to $250,000 for residential coverage. And a lot of the folks that are seeing these major problems with paying their premiums, they're not those waterfront folks. They're the folks that are a bit further back and just by some unfortunate chance of geography, they ended up in a floodplain and they're struggling to pay their mortgage. Mm-hmm. And so trying to be fair and trying to find a way to increase those rates so that, yes, they are actuarially fair, but so that they don't cause an unfair burden on the folks that are paying those.
866-999-4626 is our number. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll have more after a break. You're listening to The Point. We are talking about the National Flood Insurance Program with Shannon Jarboe. She's the Community Rating System and Floodplain Coordinator at Barnstable County through the Cape Cod Cooperative Extension and Woods Hole Sea Grant, and Joe Rossi, Flood Insurance Specialist for Rogers & Gray and sits on the National Flood Determination Association's Legislative Committee. He's also chair of the Massachusetts Coastal Coalition. 866-999-4626 is our number if you'd like to join the conversation. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. CapeAndIslands.org. Shannon, there have been several coastal homes built in Falmouth in recent years that have the elevated living spaces that Joe was just talking about. This puts them above potential floodwaters, but also dramatically changes the look of neighborhoods. Talk about the intersection of zoning laws, which might govern building height, historical districts, floodplain management, and rebuilding.
Sure. So that actually comes from the building code. And in Massachusetts, we have a state building code that cannot be changed at the local level. So that requirement for building higher comes from the building code, which incorporates some regulations from the National Flood Insurance Program. And the elevation is one of those. In our highest risk zones, we've got a couple of feet of what's called freeboard. You have to build a couple of feet above expected flood elevations. And when we get the new building code, which should be soon, the next highest risk zone will also have 1 foot of freeboard in there. So that factor of safety. So that is building code, but zoning can also play a role. And several towns are starting to look at zoning and saying whether structures can be built in certain flood zones. So it might be residential structures. It might be any structures. It might be rebuilds can only be kept to a certain size. There are lots of things that towns are looking at to limit that development in the floodplain so that it doesn't get completely eliminated. So that economic question is addressed a bit, but it does reduce the risk of damage and destruction during storms.
Yeah. Go ahead.
The only thing I'd mention is that's a great point. And what's interesting is that in some places in this country, the NFIP is the only land use tool in a community. There are no building codes, no statewide building codes. We happen to be fortunate enough to live in a state that has some really good regulations from building codes and zoning. Some areas don't. Think about the little rural town in Ohio with no state building code that's a member of the National Flood Insurance Program. That is the only code they have to build by.
Even in Houston, with the water, no place to go, something they didn't really think about, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
So you mentioned earlier, Shannon, that a lot of this is very resource intensive. It's a lot of paperwork and stuff. And there's some new legislation that Congressman Keating has introduced that would create more resources in that area?
That's correct. So one of the bills that was put into the NFIP reauthorization pool was from Congressman Keating. And that was to create a fund to create more positions like mine. So there are regional floodplain managers that the region can be defined however you want to define it. And they can help with getting towns into the CRS program, and they can also provide technical assistance on general floodplain management issues and flood insurance in general. So that is one of the bills that's in the pool that I certainly hope to see pass.
Right. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. We mentioned early on that a lot of people get confused about, you know, homeowners insurance, what it covers, and the flood insurance not being part of that. But also, I think there are people who worry about the prices, their home prices. They say, uh-oh, if I'm in the flood zone, my real estate is not worth what it was before. What
right.
are your thoughts on that?
I've heard that in a lot of different places. In some parts of the country, you are starting to see that a little bit. I have not seen it here yet, but I haven't spent a ton of time looking into that. But it is a concern, but it hasn't taken hold on a large scale at this point.
What we're seeing, and to Shannon's point, that's very true. We haven't, you know, there was a study done in Florida, and I apologize, I don't have the source, but I know that they had cited that for a $500 increase in premium, you could lose $10,000 in your home value in Florida. Mm-hmm. It's a good model, though, because I think what we have to remember that these reform acts and the Biggert Waters Act were 5 years in. And really, from the HFIAA, that was the reform act that pulled back some of those pieces in 2014. We're only about 3 years in. Mm-hmm. And we haven't seen the full rollout of what those annual increases truly look like over the course of a 5 or 10 year period. You know, as we get deeper into some of these annual increases for buildings that choose not to do those mitigations and they choose to do certain things that continue to put them in harm's way, those rate increases will truly start to affect home prices. So we haven't seen it yet, but it's coming.
Hurricane Katrina, of course, major flooding in New Orleans. We had Hurricane Sandy flooded parts of New York and New Jersey. As we look to make changes to the National Flood Insurance Program, what can we learn from those storms and the long-term impacts of major flooding?
There's a lot to learn from past storms. And these two storms that we're looking at now with Harvey and Irma, there will be a lot to learn from them as well. There's a lot to learn in terms of preparation and mitigation in advance. There are things to learn about zoning and where we want structures to be and what we want our economy to look like after a storm, and therefore how we set up our communities and how we recover, what we focus on. Things like rebuilding infrastructure. Where do we do that? How do we do that? Do we want to elevate it? What do we want to do with that? And then there's a lot you can learn from emergency response. It's a little bit outside of our wheelhouse, but there's that contributes to, especially what I do, if my working with towns and prepping them in advance and getting everything in line doesn't work for emergency responders, then, mm-mm, you know, we're in trouble. So making sure everybody's communicating and making sure that all makes sense to move forward.
And I'm just thinking of you know, some areas that are problems. I'm just, Surf Drive comes to mind here in Falmouth. It's right along the water there. And it doesn't take a too big of a storm for that road to need, I don't know how many times that road has been repaired. And you wonder, I mean, that's taxpayer money. But politically, if you were to say, you know what, we're going to cut this road off, let Mother Nature take it back, and you're going to go, people would be in an uproar. So how do you deal with those issues as we're seeing erosion? And, you know, eventually, we're not going to have a choice.
Right. So that's really a town by town decision. It's whatever elected officials are in place at the time and whatever public wants to come out and comment on that. You see that come up all over the place, all over the country. North Carolina 12 on the Outer Banks is another great example of a road that's constantly destroyed and rebuilt. Mm-hmm. But there's so much tourism that comes through that, and there's so much economy behind that it is difficult to balance those two. But each town does need to assess that.
I think what we're going to learn is it's going to reinforce some things that we already knew. And I think the first is that the NFIP functions well in its floodplain management and loss and insurance parts. People will get paid from this storm, and they will have to rebuild to new standards based on changes in the flood maps down there. However, I think it will also reinforce the changes we've always known that have needed to happen to the insurance program. You know, the great thing about the National Flood Insurance Program is that there is no reason that the program won't write you as a building. You know, that's why we have a problem with what's known as those severe repetitive losses. There are talks now in some of the proposed pieces of legislation to actually have a case where if you become so severely damaged and you continue to rebuild without mitigating, or you continue to exist as a building, they just simply won't write you through the federal program anymore. And I'm actually for that, because I think we need to start to penalize people that truly are actively, you know, I like the idea one of my committee members on the coalition said to me, you know, you can't punish the pre-firm buildings. Those are the pre-existing conditions, as in healthcare. Mm-hmm. but what we can do is those that continue to get healthy and then be unhealthy afterwards, we need to punish those people. So I think there are things that we are certainly going to learn all over again from these storms.
The effects of climate change are going to increase the frequency and severity of weather events. There's no question about this in the scientific community, but the Trump administration and many of its appointees deny climate change as a threat. And President Trump recently revoked an Obama-era executive order that established flood risk standards for federally funded infrastructure. So tell us more about President Trump's directive and its implications.
Well, Shannon can probably comment more on this than I can, because it has a direct effect on her land use part of her job. But, you know, from a insurance and mitigation standpoint, you know, this was probably not a good thing to revoke, especially after what we saw in Houston. Basically, if you were to receive a federal grant, as many people down in the Houston area will be receiving over time, you had to, by mandate, actually build 2 feet higher than the base flood elevation, or build to that 0.2 or 500-year storm elevation. It also, I believe, mandated that critical infrastructure couldn't be built in high-hazard zones or had to be built at the same standards. So what that does from an insurance side is the higher you build, the less risk you have, and the lower your premiums are by a significant amount. You know, our issue is always connecting that insurance side and the land use side together, because people don't always understand if they go higher than the mandated height, then they get a lower insurance premium. So it's an affordability piece at the end of the day, as well as a risk, a loss of risk or a lower risk perspective. So not good.
It was any federal dollars, even broader than grants. It wouldn't affect the National Flood Insurance Program, but anywhere there were federal dollars involved, any structure had to be built to higher flood standards, which was great. And whether or not you consider climate change in that, flooding is a problem and causes major, major damage. So why not put in those dollars in advance, especially after we keep seeing storm after storm that's causing this major destruction? Put that money in advance and you won't have as much destruction afterwards.
We've been talking about private homes, but what about the impacts of flooding on municipal buildings and infrastructure? How are those insured and how do towns cover the costs for these disasters?
Typically, towns tend to self-insure. They can get flood insurance through the National Flood Insurance Program if they would like it, but they do typically self-insure. I am unaware of insurance for things like roads and critical infrastructure. Maybe reinsurance might touch that, but
there's nothing through the National Flood Program that would protect an actual piece of infrastructure like land or piping or something like that. There are private companies where we deal with some of them that are their specialty is to insure infrastructure, gas mains, electrical utilities, and stuff like that. But that would be all through private sector outside of even flood insurance. It would be more of a hazard insurance at that point.
Shannon, earlier we mentioned some of the specific things towns are doing to better manage the floodplain. As you look forward, what are other changes that you hope to see in this region?
What I really hope to see is a greater understanding of floodplain management overall and flood risk from staff in the towns, municipal staff, and the public. That's a really big thing, is the public understanding of flood risk. There are some towns that are making zoning changes, as I mentioned earlier, and those are a great thing to see. More public outreach. Open space preservation. Cape Cod towns do a wonderful job with open space preservation, and this speaks to the point that you made before. If you're not building somewhere, then a building can't get damaged. You can't have damage. So the more open space there is in floodplains, then the less damage there will be after we have an event. So if towns can prioritize that open space in floodplains, that would be great. It also gets you a lot of credit in the community rating system. So for that reason, I always advocate that. Some other things, we can't really do much with the building code, as I mentioned before, but continuing to encourage the state to strengthen that. And then also some stormwater management, especially with this rain that we've seen lately. Again, we tend to think of flooding as a coastal issue, but it's also a precipitation issue. So improved stormwater management can help manage that kind of unexpected flooding that the flood maps don't account for. There's really nothing that accounts for that and lets us know what that risk is.
So we had 7 inches in one of those storms in some areas.
Right.
Yeah, which is a lot of
it
rain.
It is a lot.
One
yes.
rain event. Yeah. Are there things that homeowners in the floodplain can do to minimize their risk?
Yes, absolutely. And Joe can also speak to this, but elevating your structure, if you have the funds to do it or can get a grant to do it, that's a huge way to reduce the costs of your flood insurance. Any mitigation to your structure. So it might be adding flood vents if you don't have them. We have a lot of basements, so filling in basements is another way to do it.
Filling in the basement?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Losing that storage?
Exactly. I know. It's a catch-22 there, but that will help you to reduce some flood costs. And any of those, not only will it reduce your own flood insurance costs, but it does also contribute to your town's community rating system overall discount. It's minimal, so if you're going to do it, do it for your own purposes, not for the town, but it will contribute. But Joe, do you have anything to add to that?
Oh, yeah. The number one thing I tell people is get an elevation certificate. Now, get one, even if you have a basement, because this is what's going to happen. These rates that we talked about for these pre-existing conditioned homes are increasing, even if they're not at the 25% annual increase for second home pre-firms. They're going to go up at about 10 to 15% for primary residencies at a pre-firm versus 2 to 5% for non-pre-firm. And where are they going? I hate when people say, where are the rates going to? Well, we don't know. We don't know. We do know. They're going to where your lowest floor is being rated from on that elevation certificate.
Where do you get that?
elevation certificates can be done by land surveyors. So if you know a land surveyor, you know, we have a list on our coalition's website for our general South Shore area, but Shannon has a network, I'm sure, here on the Cape. But get a elevation certificate.
Yeah, and then real quick, Shannon, 8 of the 15 towns taking part in that community ready. Are you hoping to get all 15 on the Cape and maybe the islands?
The goal, I focus on the Cape since Barnstable County is just the Cape, but that is the goal. And we do have some level of interest from all of the towns.
All right. Joe Rossi, flood insurance specialist for Rogers & Gray Insurance Company. He sits on the National Flood Determination Association's Legislative Committee and chair of the Mass Coastal Coalition. And Shannon Darboux is the Community Rating Systems and Flood Plain Coordinator for Barnstable County through the Cape Cod Cooperative Extension and Woods Hole Sea Grant. We'll have more information about the National Flood Plain Insurance Program and the Cape Cod Cooperative Extension at our website, capeandislands.org. Thank you both for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.
The Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Jenny Junker and Dan Tridle. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.